In this instance, NBC News, either wittingly or unwittingly, is teaching election deniers that what they can do stretches well beyond appearing on our air in interviews to peddle lies about the sanctity and integrity of our elections, which Rhonda McDaniels did yesterday on Meet the Press.
Can you say, as you sit here today, did Joe Biden win the election fair and square?
He won. He's the legitimate
president. Did he win
president.
Fair and square?
Fair and square, he won. It's certified. It's done. But I
Rhonda,
do think,
why
Kristen,
is it
I,
you
let me just say
now
something.
To say that, why
because
has it taken you until now to be able to say
I'm going
to
push back a little, because I do think it's fair to say there were problems in 2020. And to say that does not mean he's not the legitimate
but Rhonda,
president.
When you
there were no problems. But what what we've also said to election deniers is not just they can do that on our airwaves, but that they can do that as one of us, as badge-carrying employees of NBC News, as paid contributors to our sacred airwaves.
That's a real quote. Our sacred airwaves. Our sacred airwaves. Al Sharpton. Rachel Maddow and Joy Reid.
Right,
Joe Scarborough.
The journalism industry is overrun with elite, underqualified, rich, entitled nepo babies.
How are you, baby? How old are you?
I don't know.
Right, people should not be walking around with masks.
Russian disinformation.
Your stewards.
You really have to appreciate the melodrama and the sanctimony of Nicole Wallace. That's her, and she appears like she's at a wake. She's on the verge of crying. And it really is crazy to see just how much our media has become a liberal arts college campus where we absolutely cannot hear different points of view. Well, other Republicans like Bill Kristol. These people have learned nothing since 2016. They might get a lesson again. I want to talk about this a bit more today. It's March 28th, and I want to go into a few things about this because I had my noggin jugged a bit on past treatment of people who weren't election deniers. And I didn't uncover this myself. I was on Twitter X, and a few people posted. And I had to be reminded about some things. In a fun exercise about Google and what Google is and what it's become, and as we talked about the AI it rolled out, I was curious, when Nicole Wallace was hired at MSNBC, what was the reaction? Remember, she was the Bush White House communications director. Bush was a war criminal. Bush and Cheney were war criminals for the war in Iraq, no weapons of mass destruction. At the time of Obama's election, you may or may not remember, Obama got the question on if he was going to prosecute George W. Bush on war crimes. April 20th, 2009, aide, Obama won't prosecute Bush officials. This is CBS News. President Barack Obama does not intend to prosecute Bush administration officials who devised the policies that led to harsh interrogation of suspected terrorists, White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel said. Obama last week authorized the release of a series of memos detailing the methods approved under President George W. Bush. In an accompanying statement, he said, "It is our intention to assure those who carried out their duties, relying in good faith upon legal advice from the Department of Justice, they will not be subject to prosecution." He did not specifically address the policymakers. Asked Sunday on ABC's This Week about the fate of those officials, Emanuel said the president believes they should not be prosecuted either, and that's not the place that we go. The decision not to seek charges against the interrogators has been criticized by the American Civil Liberties Union and called a violation of international law by the UN's top torture investigator. In his statement last week, the president said, quote, "This is time for reflection, not retribution. I respect the strong views and emotions that these issues evoke. We've been through a dark and painful chapter in our history, but at a time of great challenges and disturbing disunity, nothing will be gained by spending our time and energy laying blame for the past." You could transfer that statement to something Biden could have said about January 6th, but he didn't. My point in that is Nicole Wallace was the communications director for the Bush White House. She was the mouthpiece. She's the one that put out the talking points and did all of that. So I was curious to the reaction of MSNBC hiring former Bush administration communications director Nicole Wallace. And here is how useless Google is on this. I simply put in MSNBC hires Nicole Wallace. Here are the results. Los Angeles, Speaker Nicole Wallace. Wikipedia, MSNBC host criticized hiring Rona McDaniel. Variety, MSNBC anchor hit parade assails Rona McDaniel. ABC News, a vocal revolt. MSNBC personalities object to NBC News. Washington Post, NBC facing on-air insurrection over hiring of Rona McDaniel. Deadline, Rachel Maddow says NBC News of hire of Rona McDaniel. CNN, opinion, the writing was on the wall for Rona McDaniel. New York Times, NBC News faces rebellion over hiring of Rona McDaniel. I have to get down three pages before I get to Joe Concha at The Hill in April of 2017, ex-Bush aide Nicole Wallace to host MSNBC show. And it's a pretty straightforward rundown of Nicole Wallace's career. She was previously at CBS News and ABC News and a co-host on The View. I did not know that. She's occasionally guest hosting for Brian Williams on MSNBC's The 11th Hour recently. And so I was sitting here going, Phil Griffin hired her, by the way, former MSNBC guy. And so I was just wondering, was there a controversy? Was there anything like what we saw over, again, the most milquetoast and competent Republican that's overseen the RNC probably in my lifetime? Michael Steele's close. And I can't find anything. I have 100 results. I don't even put the name Rona McDaniel in there. But that's what I get. And this is where I'm thinking about how the internet used to be an archive. You could look back on past things. And now I can't find anything from the past. Even at least I could have a newspaper. A lot of people save newspapers for historic events, tragedies, their sports team winning. Here, I can't even look up what maybe the reaction was in 2017. I did not choose to search Twitter X, although I bet I could, to gauge a reaction to a former Bush administration aide getting her own show on MSNBC. And before anybody says, well, Nicole Wallace didn't overturn her election, you have to understand what MSNBC was with Keep Olbermann, Dylan Radigan, those people. It was like Daily Coast TV. It was off the deep end crazy. And then they came in and I guess they moderated it a bit. They gave Nicole Wallace a show. They put Crazy Joy Reid on late to where as few people could watch her as possible. Their idea of a moderate is Chris Hayes or Rachel Maddow, I guess. Both who've dabbled in their own election denialism. So we've already talked about the hypocrisy. But this was an interesting thing for Google search. I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find anything. That's not really the point I wanted to go into, but it was interesting, just as a contrast, that I don't even search Rona McDaniel's name, and yet when I try to find information, that's all I'm kind of flooded with through Google. They're trying to make this out to you and the public and the people paying attention that this is about election denialism. This is about, you know, letting her have a badge to be one of us, the head of the RNC. And it's only this special interest and people associated with Trump. Well, we know that that's not true because Joe Scarborough and NBC are more responsible for Trump's presidency than Rona McDaniel ever was. And that goes back to NBC resurrecting him from the cultural ashes to hand him the apprentice. Jeff Zucker was the head man at NBC when that all went down. And then, of course, Joe Scarborough in the 2016 primaries. We don't have to relitigate this, but 41 overall total interviews from the time he came down the escalator to the time he secured the nomination in June. 10 of those interviews were phone call-in, which was unheard of previously. You were not supposed to let candidates call in because they could have notes. They could say anything that they wanted. It also included 2-hour-long specials that went directly against GOP candidate primary debates. Joe Scarborough was a member at Mar-a-Lago for years. And then, lest we remember, Trump said, if he won, we'll marry you guys at the White House. And they almost did it. There was also a consideration for a bit that Joe Scarborough might be Trump's running mate. And he said he would be open to that idea. So excuse me if I don't buy your sanctimonious declarations of our fragile democracy and election deniers and people who help Trump. Because the show that you all cater to is hosted by the guy who did more than anyone in our media or in our country to propel Donald Trump to the presidency of the United States. And you all know it. And that's the dirty little secret. And Morning Joe, and we'll make sure he has guests on that will never, ever point that out to him. Not people like Wheelie Tom Nichols, who slurp up his table scraps. Nobody from the Lincoln Project, who are supposedly anti-Trump. Nobody like Nicole Wallace. None of his colleagues. So pardon me if I don't stand behind the honor of the NBC building badge. It belongs in a toilet, along with the rest of your credibility. We all know about the situation with Kevin Williamson in The Atlantic, but I want to start there because that is one that really showed us all what's going on. The Atlantic, same audience as MSNBC, the snobby, elitist, East Coaster of DC and New York. That's who their audience is. These aren't people who write for you. These aren't even people who host a television show to inform you. These are people who are so enamored with trying to impress each other. And whether or not that's with their on-air speeches, Chuck Todd doesn't give a shit what you think. Chuck Todd cares that he's going to get the text from his colleagues in the Slack channels. Thank you for doing that. We were all thinking the same thing. And then they see the attention Chuck Todd got. I'm going to go into some behind-the-scenes things here that are really interesting about NBC brass and how they felt about that. And then so they see the reaction Chuck Todd got. Now Nicole Wallace, our sacred airwaves, and then Rachel Maddow. And then they get everybody talking about MSNBC, whose programming for the last 2 days has all been about how great MSNBC and NBC is. The Atlantic is much the same way. These are people who don't write to inform you or me. They don't write interesting narrative stories. They used to. Now it's all about impressing each other. How do I write the piece that gets me the most accolades from the people at The Atlantic or in media and gets me on CNN or whatever? But we all remember what happened when Jeffrey Goldberg reached out and attempted to hire Kevin Williamson away from National Review, which, in my opinion, is a smart hire. For an academic, educational-style political magazine. Especially if you're interested in broadening your audience. And saying, hey, we could get some conservative readership here. Kevin Williamson isn't David Frum, okay, who isn't really a conservative. Another Bush-era administration official. And this is the point Glenn Greenwald has. That it is absolutely crazy. For as reviled as the Bush administration was, how many of them were accepted into elitist liberal media. Nicole Wallace, Steve Schmidt, David Frum, Bill Kristol, as well as hiring intelligence officials like James Clapper, David Brennan. It really did. MSNBC in particular kind of became establishment intelligence community television. So while I get a lot of you have your qualms with Glenn Greenwald and his stance on Israel and all of this stuff, he's still not wrong about this. But The Atlantic hires Kevin Williamson, and almost immediately, led by, I believe it was Jessica Valenti and others, there is a staff revolt over his stance on abortion. He said, Kevin Williamson wrote that women should be murdered. Well, no. He was actually posing a question to the political right in this particular case about if you believe that a woman having an abortion is actual murder, should that woman be tried for crimes? And in some cases, should the death penalty be put into use? It's a good philosophical question. I don't agree with the premise, but we saw with the case of Scott Peterson and Lacey Peterson, and I believe it was Southern California. And this was kind of a weird case because this is a case where Scott Peterson was convicted of murdering his wife and unborn child. She was pregnant at the time, and I believe visibly so. And he was charged with a double homicide. And that got people like me and a lot of other people in politics questioning, why is he being charged with a double homicide? Are you admitting that that's a human being in there? And if he intentionally murdered it, what's the difference between, say, what he's doing and what a woman is doing? Is it other than the fact that he dropped her in the ocean? But either way, he was terminating a life. I'm not saying that this is the example Williamson used. I'm saying that this was the basis of the theory. And so there was a huge uproar. And Jeffrey Goldberg at first was basically like, eh, deal with it. And then there was an even bigger uproar and a bigger uproar. And they were allowed to text him and threaten to quit and do Slack channel mafia. And then Jeffrey Goldberg said, nope, we're not going to hire Kevin Williamson. Even though Williamson stated that's exactly what was going to happen. And that was one of those moments where we all went, huh, okay. I mean, Kevin's kind of a controversial writer, and he has controversial opinions. And then you had the case of Megyn Kelly. Goes to NBC, and everyone was upset because she was coming from Fox, and she's given this Oprah-like contract. And then she said something along the lines of, well, my kids didn't believe in a black Santa Claus, and oh, right there, that's the reason to get rid of her. And so they did. And the most recent example, of course, was the Tom Cotton op-ed. I want to take you back to 2021. Because like I said, this is important that they want you to believe that Rhonda McDaniel is just beyond the pale, is a Trump supporter and election denier. We can't have her. Other conservatives and Republicans are welcome, like Bill Kristol, Joe Scarborough, he's a conservative Republican. And these are people who haven't voted for a single Republican in maybe a decade. But I want to take you back because their whole narrative is dependent upon how just this one conservative Republican, Rhonda McDaniel, the former head of the RNC, she's incompetent, I'll give them that. This was just this one instance. We can't have this. We'll have other conservative voices on, but we can't have her. Take you back to 2021. Ben Shapiro was granted a guest playbook column at Politico. They brought him in to have a conservative voice or whatever. And this was a thing where Shapiro, obviously not a pro-Trump guy, left Breitbart over it. Here's a Washington Post at the time. Elahi Azadi. January 14th, 2021, Politico brought Ben Shapiro on as a playbook guest author to bring balance. It brought backlash instead. The platform given to the right-wing pundit enraged Politico staffers, forcing a top editor to defend the choice. From the piece, top editors at Politico thought they would mix things up by tapping a rotating cast of guest writers for the Daily Playbook before they named a permanent new team. The new team, by the way, is Sam Stein, HuffPost, and Ryan Lizza, whatever. The guests included documentarian Ken Burns, Free Beacon editor-in-chief Eliana Johnson, MSNBC host Chris Hayes, and PBS NewsHour White House correspondent Yamiche Alcindor. And then came Shapiro. The popular and provocative right-wing commentator authored Thursday's playbook, in which he wrote sympathetically that the GOP's resistance to impeaching President Trump for inciting the Capitol riot was not because they were untroubled by his behavior, but because of a deep and abiding conservative belief that members of the opposing political tribe want their destruction. A number of reporters at the outlet were flabbergasted by the choice of author. Why did Politico give its biggest platform to a pundit with a long history of bigoted and incendiary commentary, particularly in the aftermath of last week's violence? One political reporter posted on an internal messaging platform. More than 80 colleagues signaled agreement. It's just not that he's an incendiary or conservative, said one reporter. It's that he sells falsehoods. As an incendiary persona, several political journalists spoke to the Washington Post on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly about their employer. You have journalists granting other journalists anonymity. Shapiro was founded the Daily Wire after he departed Breitbart in 2016, hosts a highly successful political podcast and radio show, commands a massive following on social media platforms. He's also drawn a legion of critics who have called him racist, homophobic, and transphobic. Unlike many conservative radio hosts, Shapiro has made clear to his listeners that Trump's claim about a rigged elections are false. But his critics have also blamed him for being part of a conservative media ecosystem that fanned the flames of discontent that led up to that riot. In a tense afternoon meeting attended by more than 240 political employees, dozens voiced disappointment and strong, strong concern. That's in quotes, by the way. As one reporter put it, everyone noted it wasn't that he's a conservative, but he has a history of bigoted comments. Doesn't that always keep coming up with these people? It's not that you're a Republican, it's that you're a bigot. Ben Shapiro, several demanded an apology. Some reporters who had trapped inside the Capitol during last week's violence were especially upset. One said Shapiro's portrayal of the Republican caucus was inaccurate and completely undermined our reporting, according to an audio clip of the meeting. Politico's top editor, Matt Kaminsky, responded to his reporters that he didn't see a need to apologize for publishing Ben Shapiro, according to three reporters on a call. According to the Daily Beast and Post media critic Eric Wemple, some employees privately supported the decision to publish Shapiro privately, but were afraid to speak up in the meeting dominated by those who opposed. Boy, you guys are a bunch of fucking firefighters, aren't you? Cool kids table. I can't speak my opinion as a journalist because I'm scared of what my colleagues might think. Sound familiar? You cowards. You bunch of fucking clowns. Claim our sacred right to the First Amendment and we're brave and you're threatening our brave democracy, but I better not speak up lest my colleagues kick me out of the lunchroom. You've been listening to the Versus Media podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media podcast on Substack, and as usual, don't ever talk to journalists.